Welcome into Locked On Knicks. A little more draft talk for you guys. We are back with Prez at underscore Presidente on Twitter of postingandtoasting.com, a website near and dear to your heart, Alex. And we're finishing up our conversation on the best point guards in the 2020 NBA draft.
Yeah, and we get into some kind of polarizing guys today. Tyrese Maxey, who it seems like a lot of people have a hard time, figuring out completely. We talk about him, talk about Cole Anthony, who you want to talk about polarizing. I mean, some people think he's going to be fantastic. Other people think he's going to be awful without much in between. But Prez gives a pretty measured take on his game and a little more on Grant Riller and some other guys as well. So if you didn't get enough of a dose of Grant Riller before, then you'll certainly get some today.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up off the glass. It's good. RJ brings the Knicks to the room.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam across the lane. Knox fouled from behind. Count it and one to Trier. Trier drives.
It and then I'm curious to hear who your number three guy is, because I wrote down a little list myself, and it's a real diversity of options. You don't necessarily have anyone who looks like a modern NBA point guard in a lot of ways, like Tyrese Haliburton. The phrase you keep hearing bandied about with him is he's more of a connector than a point guard, because he's not going to break you down off the dribble necessarily, but he's going to be a guy, like, when you get a defense in rotation, he'll make the perfect pass every single time. Someone like Cole Anthony, who maybe has nominally the profile of CJ McCollum or a Damian Lillard, but a lot of people think is more of a two guard in a point guard's body. And then Kyra Lewis, who to me is maybe should be the third guy out of that group, and is sort of the most traditional point guard after the top two. Is one of those three your next guy, or is it a wild card?
There's definitely a new tier after those two, not just for guards, but for all the players. Of the point guards, my next favorite is actually Grant Riller, but that's like the super flaming hot take that, like, I'm probably one of a few people, maybe alone, possibly on that hill. But aside from Riller, I would probably put Kyra Lewis if I had to pick.
Yeah, we've talked about Kyra a little bit. Like, we talked about him quite a bit when Spencer was on, I think. And he seems to be a riser, too. It seems like one of those guys that, I mean, played for Alabama, which is an SEC school, but isn't really a big basketball school. And it seemed like he sort of, was just kind of getting some consideration throughout the year and whatever. But the reality with him is, like, he's younger than Cole Anthony, for example, who went in as a freshman this year. But, like, Kyra was a sophomore, but was extremely young last year and therefore is still young this year. I don't know. What's your general read on him? Like, it seems like he's now, especially now that people have had all this extra time to sit and watch film and learn about these prospects more, it seems like the general opinion of him has gone, like, through the roof lately, to where he was, maybe a 15-ish pick for, a couple months ago even. And now I'm starting to see people discussing, if the Knicks would, like, really be unlucky and fall to 8 or something, maybe Kyra Lewis is, like, in the discussion there, and it wouldn't even be that crazy of a pick.
Yeah, I think he's definitely in the discussion. Before everything shut down in the country, he ended his season basically on a tear. Like, his last 10 games or so, he was shooting, like, for that series of games, he was shooting well above 40%, like 45% from three. So his stats were trending up big time. And like you said, he's younger than Cole, which is the other guy he's compared with. But it kind of goes back to what I mentioned before. I'm like, when I look at guards, especially any player, but guards especially, I'm like, what is your elite skill? And you have to be able to get, versus college students or non-NBA players, you have to be able to get buckets where it's just clear that, like, all right, these other people can't keep up with you. Cole Anthony, is really talented and is good at a lot of things. But, and, you know, part of this was because of his team, but it seems like so many of Cole Anthony's buckets were high degree of difficulty. He had to hit dudes with, like, combos of crossovers and then stop on a dime and pull up and raise up over the contest and hit a tough isolation bucket, or he had to hit a three-pointer off the dribble from NBA range or finish, you know, a reverse in traffic. And that stuff is all impressive, but it's kind of misleading. What I always look for is the times, like, how many times can you get a bucket where you just blow somebody away and then it's just an easy layup or a dunk or a wide open pull-up or something like that. And Kyra, because he's so fast, and even if his handle is probably a little bit below where Cole Anthony's is, it's still solid, and he's so freaking fast that he'll just leave guys standing. And even though he's not a good finisher, he's actually a really bad finisher. Even though he's not a good finisher, he'll, you know, if you're open, it's still a layup, right? So he'll just blow by guys and get easy lanes and get baskets that way, or cross dudes and just pull up smoothly off of crossovers, or when somebody goes under a pick. And that's kind of what I look for, is how many times does it look like this is too easy for you? And he passes that test more than Cole Anthony, which is why I think the Knicks would consider him. The toughest hypothetical draft situation for me as a fan is if the Knicks have, like, the 7th or 8th pick and LaMelo, Killian, Edwards are all gone, and you're looking at some combination of Kyra, Cole Anthony, and Vassell, or Pat Williams and Poku and those guys, and Okoro. That's when I'm like, I don't know, because Kyra's the best lead guard and we really need that, but there's good arguments that he's not the best player of that group. So what do you do? I don't want to be the decision maker for that.
What are the drawbacks with Kyra? Because whenever I hear people talk about him, I mean, specifically you and Spencer, but even like national draft pundits, my thought is, why isn't he a consensus top 10 guy? Why isn't he a borderline top 5 guy? You just hear strength after strength after strength, good decision maker, lightning quick, plus shooter, like arguably out of all these point guards, maybe the best shooter of the group. What are sort of the reasons? Is it just his build that he's not considered like a universally like better prospect and a real contender for one of those top 3 point guard spots?
He's not a super good decision maker yet. He has flashes of great passes, but he's going to be in the NBA learning how to play point guard still. Even though he was a point guard for 2 years, he's not going to be one of those guys who just comes in and will like organize your offense super proficiently. He won't be bad at it, or it's not like a, you know, like when they tried to put RJ Barrett at point guard and it's like he's just kind of figuring this shit out for the first time. Like, he's above that, but he's not as organized.
Can any of the guys in the draft do that from day one, do you think?
LaMelo and Killian, but that's why they're
okay. Gotcha.
In the top group.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff you kind of hinted at. So his build affects his defense and his finishing. He's like a Frank level finisher. Like I think he finished below 50% around the rim in the half court, which is really bad. Weirdly, watching Frank go from like a horrible, horrible finisher to passable over the last few years, I wonder if now I think anybody's finishing can just be fixed, and I've swung too far in the other direction in terms of caring about it. But it's certainly a concern for Kyra, because it's the combination of him avoiding contact because he knows he's, whatever, 160 pounds, and also him just not really having a ton of touch yet around the hoop. And the build also impacts him on defense, where he does this weird thing that's very... He has moments where he plays solid defense. I think Spencer, for example, is higher on his defense than me. And he has, like, a solid wingspan. I think he's, like, 6'3", with a 6'6", wingspan or something. And, you know, he's going to gain weight, but he has this thing where he'll just preemptively give up space. Like, he doesn't always get as physical as he needs to be, and he'll just back up for no reason if the other player is sometimes beginning to come toward him. And then before you know it, instead of at the three-point line being physical, the guy's being physical with him like 17 feet away. And at that point, it's just barbecue chicken because he's like 160 pounds.
Yeah. I wanted to move on from Kyra to the other guy that you were sort of talking about that's sort of a direct comp for him in Cole Anthony. And I don't know if I'm just remembering this wrong. I feel like I did see you on Twitter one time kind of saying, like, is it possible that we're, like, underestimating just how awful his situation was this year and, like, just how much he was counted on, like, easily the worst UNC team in the last, I don't even freaking know, like, 25 years? I can't remember a time when UNC was ever as bad as they were this past year. Do you think maybe there is something to that? That, you know, maybe we, because, like, Cole, I think, catches a lot of flack. And, I mean, some of it deserves, some of it not for his percentages and some of that stuff. And it did seem like he sort of forced the issue a little bit, but then when you sit and think about it, it's like, wouldn't you force the issue on a team where you were the only person that could reasonably score the ball? Like, and you know, even Roy Williams has said things to a similar effect of like, I don't fault him at all for anything because nobody, you know, our plan A was Cole Anthony, our plan B was Cole Anthony, our plan C was Cole Anthony, like on every single possession, because I was the only person. Or I think he had a quote that it was like we kept hoping that Cole Anthony could pass it to Cole Anthony for the assist or something like that. Like it was some crazy quote like that you don't normally hear head coaches making. I mean, what do you take away from him and his situation, and how much do you think ultimately, you know, his situation affected him this year versus some of it potentially just showing more of who he is, I guess, is a way to put it.
Yeah. So I kind of look when I hear statements like that, like, and I watch UNC, I see they have. So UNC had no, for people who didn't watch any UNC basketball, they usually played two big men, and nobody aside from Cole shot above 30% from three on the entire roster. So it was bad. But even knowing that, I think of, all right, where did that specifically impact his game? Because he has a lot of, you know, statistically, especially red flags or whatever. So in order to give him the benefit of the doubt, it's like, all right, what actually specifically was harder because of the team construction? And the main thing that stands out is his finishing. Like, his finishing numbers were bad. And I don't mean like Kyra or Frank. I mean, like, it looks like a like an outlier, like it shouldn't be, like it was a fluke, and in a lot of ways it was. I think his finishing numbers were like in the half court were even worse than Kyra's. But if you watch him before in high school, and if you just watch him in general, like he's not ground bound. He's not as explosive as people would hope, and as his YouTube and high school footage would lead you to believe. But he's not ground bound, and he has touch. And what's the stat? I have it written down somewhere here. So you can look up on hoopmath.com a bunch of cool stats, including what percentage of shots were assisted at the rim. And his was very low. So I can just play a quick game real fast. So Kyra Lewis had 20% of his shots at the rim assisted. What do you think Cole Anthony's number was? And that 20% is probably like around average for guards. Some people like Tyrese Halliburton are way, way higher. But
I'm guessing it's gonna be sub 5%. Like,
yeah, I was gonna say 3%
or something.
I'm throwing 4%.
You guys went hard. It's not that bad. It's 8%. But 8% okay. Is still like fucking unheard of. Like there's like most like 90% of the lottery prospect guards that who you see will be at 20 or higher because their teams are not not just insanely poorly built or whatever. So that means he had to do all this shit by himself, and he had the hardest shot selection at the rim of any of these shorter guards or any guards in all of college pretty much. And you look all over his stat profile as you keep digging deeper, and you see kind of evidence of that. He had the second most unassisted threes in all of college behind Anthony Edwards. So he he was just creating a lot for himself, and he's very good at that. He is, I forget the exact stats, but I think he was in the like 95th percentile in terms of points per possession on isolations. But it goes back to what I was saying before. I'm like, that's all well and good that you can hit hard shots, but I'm trying to see how many easy shots can you get versus future accountants and pharmacists and shit like that. If you can't do that, then you're not going to get these easy shots against the Bucks or the Sixers. Like, it's just not going to happen.
And to your point, I assume that's the reason you love Grant Riller so much. And I can't say I sat down and watched too many Charleston games this year, but watching his highlights, what really stands out, and this is sort of what you were hinting at, is the way he just gets easy separation from guys, and he explodes from spot to spot on the court. And I mean, really, I think he does it at a level that I haven't seen from any other point guard in this draft. Obviously, the catch there is he's 4 or 5 years older than most of the guys we're talking about, 5 years older than LaMelo, 4 years older than Kyra, 3 years older than Cole Anthony. And I guess to justify having him at three, you have to think he's so much better than guys like Kyra and Cole, because you're giving him an extra 3-4 years of development, but clearly that's your opinion. So I guess what leads you to think that?
So let me just be clear first. I have him at third among the guards, not overall.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Okay, cool. But yeah, so the way I kind of view it is, first of all, the counter argument, which is really strong, which is why I know I'm on an island here. If you're like, all right, Prez, if Kyra Lewis came back to Alabama in 4 years, you're going to tell me he wouldn't just tear everybody a new asshole? Like, he 100% would. Like, it's no doubt about that in my mind. But my thing with guys who are older is, if you're older, you have to have used that time to develop not only well, but like borderline outlier. And the example I always give of this is Mikal Bridges from a few years ago, who a lot of people like to ding him because he was older, but he was an elite defender, he was an elite three-point shooter, and he was an elite finisher. And I'm like, for any wing prospect who's 18 or 17 or 19, you hope they can become elite at one thing, maybe two things, by the time they're 22. And here you had a guy who was 21, 22, and elite at three things. So that he already experienced the best possible development you could have wanted in those years. So there was no reason for me to penalize him for that in my head. Riller is not quite as extreme as Mikal. Like, we can argue about what he's elite at. He's an elite finisher. I ain't arguing that. That's just the facts. But aside from that, he's really good. He's a pretty good jump shooter. He doesn't get similar to Cole. He doesn't really get to shoot off the catch much because he has to handle everything for his team. He can get anywhere on the court. He's elite at driving. So he got to the rim more often than every other guard in the class. He got fouled there more often than any other guard in the class. And he scored better finishing at the rim more than any other guard of the class, which I know he's older and he should, but like, he's already really good at that stuff. And kind of what y'all were hinting at in terms of the non-LaMelo, non-Killian guards, for all the other guards, you're looking at guys who are, for the most part, going to have to learn a little bit of the point guard position in terms of managing the offense. And he's kind of like that too, even though he's older. He didn't start out really playing full-time point guard. And even this last year, he shared a little bit. But every single year, bottom line, like, this is a guy who, my sales pitch would be this. Every single year, like, all his stats went up, his rate stats. His scoring efficiency has been over 60 true shooting for 4 years. He's become, his rebounding has gone up every year. His assist rate has gone up every year. His steal rate, his block rate, his free throws drawn, is like, it's all gone up every year. And he's not a non-passer either, even though he's like a combo guard. His assist rate, I think, was at 30, which means he might not have the textbook passes that you want a point guard to see like Killian has, but he has enough gravity to make up for it in some respects, because he can get wherever the hell he wants and he draws so much attention. So to me, even off driving kicks alone, like, he's never going to be a 10 assist per game guy, but if he had a starting role and played like 30 minutes in the NBA, I don't have any doubt that he could, for example, hit 5 assists might have a couple of bad decisions mixed in there, but so do most of these guys. So give me the guy who has already proven he has some elite skills, can get anywhere he wants, can draw free throws, can play on or off the ball, can create for himself, can create for others, and can finish. And he played in a weak division, but he did have a few non-conference games versus good teams, and he looked just as fine in those games. So I'm not super worried about, oh, College of Charleston, who did he play, or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly did a pretty good job selling me on him, and I'm not super familiar with him either, as Gavin was saying, but I definitely feel like I have to look up more film on Riller now. I do want to move on to another player, though, that I'm intrigued by. I mean, I think from a Knicks perspective, he could, I mean, if the Knicks actually, and I mean, this remains to be seen with the new regime and everything, but if Leon Rose is a believer in Frank, and that Frank can potentially turn into something and wants a good player that would work as a complement to him in the backcourt that isn't necessarily going to be, you know, a LaMelo Ball or something. Not that they would pass on LaMelo for this guy, but, you know, that isn't going to be a super ball dominant point guard that needs it all the time and could just sort of be a complementary guard to like Frank and RJ, where the three of them could potentially handle the ball, you know, different amounts, but all still be able to do something without the ball as well. Tyrese Maxey comes to mind, and it's a guy that I've just started kind of doing a little more research on because he's intriguing to me. Seems sort of like a combo guard, didn't shoot a fantastic percentage in college, but the general consensus seems to be like he made his free throws at a high enough rate and his form looks really nice that, you know, it shouldn't be too hard for him with just a ton of reps to eventually become a pretty decent shooter. It seems like a tireless defender. You know, he, you know, gives it his all on that side of the ball. What's your read on Maxey? You know, despite not being the pure point guard that we've been talking about the Knicks needing and having needed for years now, you know, maybe being a fit on this team, given that they do have two guards that, while not necessarily point guards in RJ and Frank, definitely have, you know, enough skills to handle the ball some of the time and could potentially create like an interesting timeshare there.
He's been kind of the hardest player for me to evaluate, to be honest. And I think it's because I'm a Knicks fan. And if I didn't have to worry so much about like, who's our point guard, I'd probably overlook the fact that he's a little bit lower on the curve, so to speak, in terms of being able to organize an offense and make the right reads and stuff like that consistently with the ball in his hands. He's definitely a point guard who, a combo guard who is more of a two than a one. Unlike say Cole, who I think, you know, he's still not a perfect point guard, but I would still say he can, like, I'd feel comfortable. Well, maybe not comfortable, but he's had experience organizing offenses, even if the results are mixed. Maxey's really good at a few things, namely defense. He's really big. He's like 225, and he has like 6'3", with a 6'6 wingspan. And they would just literally just put him on somebody, and he would just shut them down, like, for the game. There's a few guys in this draft who are really good help defenders, like Halliburton and Hayes and stuff like that. And he's okay at that, but really, you just put him on somebody and it's like not quite like Frank, but he do a good job holding his own against ones and twos. I don't know if he's going to be able to clamp up versus wings in the NBA, just because, I mean, unless you're truly special like Marcus Smart, it's really hard to just deal with guys who are that much bigger than you. But in terms of ones and twos, I'm not worried about him on defense. And I'm similar to you in terms of his shot. I believe in it. He's a really good finisher. He has a good floater. I believe in the three-point shot. So I think he'll be able to get buckets too, immediately, to be honest. When he gets into the league, I just don't know. I don't know. For two guard, the way I see it, when you're off the ball and you're not a primary initiator, there's just so much more that's asked of you on defense. And in today's league where you have to be real switchable, it's just hard to be a short two guard unless you're really good at other stuff, like Donovan Mitchell or something like that. But he's the kind of guy who could honestly make me eat my words. I mean, he wouldn't be the first Kentucky player to be pigeonholed into a role and then become a fucking wonder child in the NBA.
Prez, as we sort of, I think, get a little closer to wrapping up here, is there one guy we didn't ask you about, or maybe a deep sleeper at the guard spot you're really in love with? And I think it's worth asking because you keep hearing again and again, the one area this draft is really good is at the point guard spot. So is there someone who could maybe, just because of the sheer depth at the position, fall to the second round who shouldn't?
Yeah, I'm going to double back and cheat and just double back on Grant Riller. I seriously, truly think he's better than Cole Anthony and Kyra Lewis as a pick. I think he's going to be a better player at his best than those guys. I think he's going to be able to play point guard in the NBA in terms of running the offense and passing and stuff like that. Maybe not in year one, but he's really good enough at all the other stuff that by year two or three, he'll be really cooking with grease out here. And I think his ceiling is high. I think, to me, I'm like, I look at him and I look at the way he scores and where he gets anywhere to the line, the way he can shoot off the catch, the way he can hit free throws and draw free throws. And he's just a recipe for an efficiency monster waiting to happen. And if all he has to do is go from a guy who had a 30% assist rate, but sometimes made questionable decisions, to a guy with a 35 or 36% assist rate, which is not uncommon among point guards. Like, you know, you can pick whoever, Devontae Graham, Kemba Walker, like any of those guys, like that's not a hard thing to ask to me. So sometimes people look at his age and say like, well, how much upside is he? Cause he's already really good, but I am dying on this hill. So there it is. That's my guy.
All right. Well, I think that's as good a note as any to wrap up on. A nice deep sleeper. Well, not super deep, but a nice sleeper for people to look up into. Potentially a guy that could be there for the Knicks with that Clippers pick if they happen to go a different route with their top pick. Like, let's say they end up as the 7 pick. They take, like, Denny Avdia or something like that, and then Riller's there at 27-ish with that Clippers pick. That could certainly be a route that they look to go. Prez, how about you let everybody know where to find you online? If you have anything coming up that you're, you know, excited to share or whatever, if there's anything you want to plug at all, just now's the time.
Yeah, sure. I write on PNT sometimes. And I'm on Twitter at underscore PrezIdente. I don't have anything cooking right now. I had 2 PNT pieces within a week of each other, which is like unheard of for me. So I guess if you want, go read my piece frowning upon Tyrese Halliburton, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I thought they were great. And you had the player haters ball 2020, right? They're disrespectful comps, which is always a fun article as well. So definitely check those out. Those are on postingandtoasting.com. Prez, thanks so much for coming on, dude. This is people listening would know, but this is actually pretty short notice. We got you on today just because we were like, damn, we need a guest today, and like hit you up and you were right ready to come on. So thanks so much for making the time and coming on and really giving us a good look at some of these point guards that the Knicks could potentially be looking at.
You know it.